I think I'm not supposed to move the mic from the stand, is that right? Hello, okay, well, I'm Robin Fishwick, so I think we'll just introduce ourselves as we go along. That's probably the best thing. Right, I thought what we'd do, just as a little warm-up exercise, want to see why people are here. Not in a big theological way, but... Oh, it does come off, that's good. Right, so what can we do this? Can we all stand up? If everybody stands up, what am I going to do? I'm going to ask you to think about one thing you want to get from this session, because we've only got 1 minute of jam-packed quality time. So think about one thing which you want to get from this session, and I'm going to ask somebody at random, and if what they say is what you're after, you sit down when they sit down, and hopefully we'll have you all sitting down within a couple of minutes. Right, okay, I'm going to ask this woman here, what would you like to know about?
Well, we're thinking about co-housing next year, so I guess getting a bit more of a realistic picture.
Okay, so anybody who's contemplating going into some sort of co-housing scheme, anybody who thinks this is might something which they might want to do themselves, if you can sit down. Are we going to get here? Is this going to work? We don't know. Right, I'm going to ask this man now.
I just want to find out what it's all about.
All right, that's a good vague one. What? Going to find out what it's all about. Thank you. That's moved things on well. Right. Right, that's good. Okay, we can get on to the specialist stuff fairly quickly. I'm going to ask artist delivery here.
Okay, will be a bit odd. Okay, I work in the Ordnance Survey, and we're starting to look at things to do with sustainable living. And when I saw this description, I thought that might be a part of our jigsaw.
Brilliant. So anybody else working for Ordnance Survey? Right, anybody who is interested in more sustainable living? Oh, no. Right, okay. Is anybody still standing up? This man here, we've got a query from this man here.
It's a bit vague, really, but I'm just interested in the wider view of how we change society, because clearly the current ways of being in society, being in community, are not working.
Brilliant, that's great. So that's oh, thank you. You got somebody with you there. It's not that vague. Right, okay. I think we've got all covered now, haven't we? Oh, lady over there.
I was just wondering how it works in terms of little nuclear families as well as other people with them, how that works as like family life as well.
Oh, that's brilliant. So that's about how, you know, do we share each other's wives? I think that's the question underneath. Right, I'm going to hand over to Bill Phelps now. You don't have to introduce yourself.
That was Robin. Thanks. I'm Bill. I'm from Chapel Town, co-housing in Leeds, and there's quite a few of us here today. So our group's in the early stages of development. So although we're really passionate about co-housing, we've got no idea really what it's like to live in it. However, over on the other side of Leeds, there's another group called Lilac who've blazed the trail for us, and they've been living in their straw bale homes for the last couple of years now, I think. So, which is good news for us. And it's also good news for you, because there'll be somebody up here who knows what they're talking about, which doesn't apply to me. I've been coming to Greenbelt for about 25 years now, and there's nearly always been something about community living on the programme. And in 2007, Tobias Jones did a talk about his new book, as it then was, Utopian Dreams. Did anyone hear Tobias yesterday? He was doing his stuff in the Grove. Yeah, thanks. So that's the book, and I don't know how long the bookstore's open, but that's the copy's in there. And now, a couple of years after he'd done his talk, he and his wife set up a woodland commune for based on large, very. Very much based on the same sort of principles as the Pilsden community that we were told about in the communion service yesterday. It's a woodland commune for people in crisis. I don't know if that's a fair description, but it'll have to do. So this session's about another very different sort of strand of community living, and probably a bit less scary. And it's something that's starting to take off in this country a bit. At the moment, there's probably about 20 established co-housing groups in the UK. There's about 70 in development, that's like us. And then there's, in the Netherlands, Scandinavia, there's hundreds. North America, sort of Canada and the US, there's probably another couple of hundreds or so. And the whole model's been running since sort of the 60s, really. But we're a bit slow on the uptake here. There's something funny about the way we do housing over here that doesn't work really well. The things we've got to learn. So co-housing is about building mutual support and sharing into the way that we do housing. It's not a full-on commune, so it's probably a bit less scary, a scary leap of the imagination to imagine doing it. And that's one of the attractions for me. It's sort of a way in. It's like, I suppose it's like the cannabis of sort of community living compared to the sort of class A sort of thing that Tobias Jones is doing. So it's a gateway, if you like. I think of it as community light. The key idea, anyway, is that as well as your own private unit, your own lockable front door, you also have sort of shared facilities in a common house. So as well as building, say, for us, sort of 30 houses, we've got to. We also got to find the cash to build one more house that's got sort of room for dining room, kitchen, laundry room, guest rooms, shared facilities, workshop, that sort of thing. And the idea is that it's an intentional community of people who've decided they want to live like this and are going to sort of somehow get together the sort of the organisation and the funds and the determination to make this sort of thing happen. I think maybe the quickest way to give you a flavour of co-housing is to show you a 2-minute video about Lancaster co-housing, which again has been going about the same length of time as Lilac. Now, amazingly, these lights here shining onto the screen, they don't have a separate on-off switch. And we're not allowed to turn off all the lights because then, obviously, you know, chaos would ensue, health and safety. So we've got our own sort of solution. So Anna, Ali, thank you. Yeah, right. David, take it away. So that just gives you a flavour of one way of doing co-housing. There's all sorts of different flavours of co-housing. And the £300,000 houses are not what we're going to be doing. David's just setting up to show. Right, fantastic. This is Chapeltown, where I live. You may have heard of the annual West Indian Carnival, which is happening right now. I hope they got better weather than us. And that's where Ali and I live. That's our street. So not quite the same as the banks of the River Loon. And the next slide. That's the site that we've identified. There's about 6.5 acres of it all together, so far more than we need, and we're negotiating with the council for it. And next slide. Yeah, sorry. Perhaps if I sit, is that better? Yeah. So we've been having fun with our architects, sort of dreaming our own sort of suburban, so our own urban utopia in the neighbourhood. And I won't talk much about these at the moment because we'll come back to the individual projects, Chaco and Lilac, later. But just to give you a flavour, on to a few shots of Lilac in the interests of fairness. So a fair number of these. You can spot the people here. Next one. Yeah, that's a nice view of the common house, just sort of centre right. Yeah, thank you. And the pond, yeah. And then next one. I like this shot. Co-housing at night. Yeah, it looks idyllic. I'm sure there's a lot more to the story than that. Anyway,
that's it for the visuals, or for these sorts of visuals. Bear with me. Apparently I've got 1 minute. What's the... I'm going to just run very quickly through a list of some of the benefits of co-housing. It's going to be fast. Mutual support, sociability when you want it, privacy when you want it, antidote to loneliness, smaller houses are cheaper to build, shared facilities, so that's cars, washing machines, guest rooms, saving money and resources, a much reduced carbon footprint, community cohesion, so there's a lot fewer interventions from social services and the police and health professionals, etc. A sense of ownership, even if you're not owning, even if you're renting, because you're designing the community and you're running it, it's you're much more involved. You're committed. It's not going to happen if you don't get involved. Support for older people and young, built-in babysitters, possibility of doing food growing, and then living in a low-energy house and neighbourhood that you've helped to design rather than some mass-produced box on a soulless sort of Barrett or Wimpy estate. And finally, for me as a Christian who's sort of into sort of global justice issues, it's a sort of it ticks the think global, act local box. You know, the stuff that we can do here that actually affects sort of climate change. But I think that's enough theory. I think it's time I hand over to Robin so that you can hear about Lilac.
Okay, so that's Bill talking about Chaco, which is still on the drawing board to a large extent. Lilac's been going for about, well, we've been living there for over 2 years now, and that's what the pictures are over there. That wonderful first picture with all the people in front, which was shown up on the screen, it was done by the Sunday Times for the Real Britannia magazine, and it actually took an hour and 15 minutes for us to actually get that right. So these have been taken a lot more quickly, and they're just as good, I think. Anyway, so what we're going to do over the next 15 minutes or so, we're going to go through the three things which make Lilac Lilac. Now, Lilac has this name, Lilac, and it's like many things about Lilac. It was a provisional, like, working title, which ended up becoming permanent. And Lilac stands for Low Impact Living, Affordable Community. And so what we're going to talk about now, the next 15 minutes, is we'll talk about the three elements of that. So that's the low impact, the affordability, and the community element. And so I'm going to start off with talking a bit about the low impact. So we're looking at a way of, as Bill said, sort of reducing our global footprint. And I'll sort of draw your attention to some of the pictures up there. You can go and have a look at them more closely. There's one thing about us is that the main construction is straw bale. So these are straw bales here, which are put into this very, very, very strong, high-density pine unit. These were actually done at a factory. It wasn't really a factory at all. It was a barn in a farm at Dewsbury. We took over the barn, we made these panels, and then the panels were shipped out to the site, which is not the sort of place where you can leave lots of stuff lying around. And they were put together to make our dwellings. So because of that, you've got this great thickness, about that thick. It does two things. One of the things, it's a very low carbon way of actually, it's low carbon material basically, because it's pure straw. It just grows. It grows in a year, and all that is carbon. So that's carbon capture. So we've already, you know, it's carbon captured in there. And the other thing is that it's treated with something called limecrete, which again is something which is more traditional material than concrete, and it involves less carbon in its production. So these panels were sprayed with limecrete, and then those sealed units were brought over to where we are, which is Bramley. It's not quite like Chapel Town, but it's only ironically known as the Big Apple. If you look there, the next one is you can't really work out where it's from or the dimensions, but that is our guest bedroom. And you can see there, that little box there is so any guest staying can see that behind that panel it's straw bale. So the construction itself is sort of low carbon, and because it's straw bale, the insulating properties are huge. And, you know, you just come in and the heating's not been on, but it's still warm, you know. And you know, the problem is we come out in winter inappropriately dressed for the weather because we've been lulled into a false sense of security. Big triple glazed windows, and the whole layout is designed so that we're catching a lot of solar gain, so passive solar heating. We have solar panels on the roof, which are photovoltaic panels, and also solar panels which heat into a solar water heating system for quite a few of us. And we are actually contributing to the national grid some of the time through eco-tricity. So that's some of the things in the actual construction. Then the next thing, so we've got the construction. We've also got ways in which the fact that we do a lot of sharing lowers the impact. And just like our friends in Lancaster, we have our own little sort of fleet of washing machines. So instead of having one washing machine per house, there's five washing machines which cover the entire complex. We've got our own common house, so we have quite a few communal facilities. And it's not just washing machines; it's things like angle grinders. You know, how many angle grinders do you need? You need about a 20th of an angle grinder. You know, you don't need one every week, do you? Not usually. Not unless you're the A team. You don't need an angle grinder very often. So things like that. You know, we've got a whole load of stuff in the toolbox, in the workshop, which we can borrow and we can lend. And there are shared accommodations. So that room I was pointing to, that's the third one along, that's a guest bedroom. We realised that we had a little bit of space at the top of the stairs of the blocks of flats. And we realised if we made that space a little bit wider, we could make a sort of a very small guest bedroom. And it's the sort of size of a monastic cell, probably. You know, it's good enough to sleep in overnight. But we do have a guest bedroom. We have two bedroom guest bedrooms on those blocks of flats, and also we have a guest bedroom in the common house. What that means is that because a lot of people will buy a house with an extra room in case they want to have somebody to stay, you're more likely to move into a house which has one fewer room. So again, it's actually lowering your impact by moving into a dwelling which doesn't have one room which you don't use most of the year. And this actually spills on to the next point I'm going to make. I should be looking at the clock. I've got a minute left. And that is that there's a sort of mutual inspiration which arises for us being together. And we develop patterns of living almost sort of passively, almost by osmosis, which itself lowers our impact. And one of the things is just go with those guest bedrooms. Most of our guests do not sleep in those guest bedrooms. Most of our guests sleep in other people's rooms. Because when people go away, they'll say, oh, I'm going away this week. Anybody can stay in our room, in our house. And we're very used, you know, not just to sort of bunging people into, you know, offering our spare room to people. But also, this is a key thing, is actually reaching out and asking for things. Reaching out and borrowing for things. And I'm just beginning to be thinking this recently, that it's a... I know somebody had been talking about hospitality this weekend and actually... and vulnerability. And actually, you know, being self-sufficient or trying to be self-sufficient is not good. You know, pride is a sin and actually, you know, it's not good for the environment. Because, you know, if you sort of pretend that you've got everything you need and you don't want to go to your neighbour and say, can you lend me this? Can you give me a lift? Can you put up my uncle next week? Then what you're doing is you're increasing your impact on the environment. Okay, I've got to go now, so I'm going to hand over to Laura, who in 5 minutes, hopefully if I left in 5 minutes, is going to explain the entire financial model with the use of Lego.
Okay, so affordability has always been at the core of Lilac, and it's... driven the way we've designed things, and it's driven the kind of financial model that we've got. It's quite a complex model, so it'll only be like a bit of a flavour of it, and if anybody wants to talk to me about it in more depth afterwards, that will be fine. So one morning I was driving to work and I was listening to Radio 4, as one does, and I heard the following remark: you know something is wrong when you go out to work and by the time you get home, your house has earned more than you have. And, you know, at first, if you've got a house, it takes a bit of a head switch to get over the fact that at the end of the year, your house might have earned £50,000 and seeing that as a bad thing. But that's what's creating a real crisis in the housing market. Yeah, it's not real money. It just means that young people can't afford ever to get on the housing market because it's constantly running further ahead than they are. So for us, one of our core values has always been about affordability. And that led us into becoming the first ever mutual home ownership society on the planet. Okay, so we need to now tell you a little bit about this complicated thing called an MHOS. Yeah, an MHOS is an equity-based leasehold system. Ooh, yeah, the society as a whole has one mortgage, and members buy equity shares in the whole society. They don't actually buy their individual house. They have a lease for the house. So it is quite complicated. So I thought, given that I've only got a few minutes to show you this complicated model, we'd need some props, OK? So let me try and have multiple hands. OK, here's a little family, a little household. So we've got some people who would... Ow! So we do have families. We've also got people who very vehemently say, I'm a household, OK? So these are some lilac households. We have some money. So people come into Lilac. Some of them earn lots of money and some of them earn a little bit of money. So these guys have a little bit of money. These guys have lots of money, yeah? Everybody pays 35% of their income, no matter what it is. So they get their salary every month and they keep 65% and 35% goes to Lilac. These guys, oh, they're lucky. They're lecturers, they're professors, they're doctors. They get tons of dosh and they still give 35% of it to Lilac. Okay, they keep 65% for themselves. So for that, what they get, if they've paid the little pile, they get small amounts of equity. Okay, so they buy equity every month and they gradually, month by month, acquire equity in Lilac. People who've paid in 35%, that's a lot, they buy slightly more equity every month. So they're not chucking it away, yeah? They're basically taking on more of the debt that's associated with the whole project because they've got the capacity to do that, but in return they get more equity. That equity might not actually be directly related to the value of their house. So they might take on equity that's actually worth more than the house that they're living in. And similarly, other members won't be able to fund all the debt that's associated with their house. They just pay their 35%, they get some shares, and it doesn't matter that they're not paying enough, basically, to fund all the debt that's associated with their house because somebody else is taking on some of that. So sometimes people get a bonus or, ha, 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 one day they might get a pay rise, yeah? We live in this fantasy land where maybe we'll eventually get a pay rise. If that happens... again, 35% goes to Lilac. Now, there aren't more shares to give out, but you still get equity. You're basically just buying off your equity faster. But if you're in that lucky position where you're getting even more money, also half of it goes to some wonderful thing that we've got called the Lilac Equity Fund. And that is a really important part of our financial stability and also about equitability in the project. Okay. So just one more thing. I can take that down. Thank you. So why do we adopt such a complex model? I mean, maybe I've not made it look really complex, but it is. It's really complex, yeah? So what's important for us is that it helps develop deep threads of mutualism, yeah? So we are all interconnected. If somebody defaults, we're all stuffed. But also if somebody loses the job, then somebody else can take on their shares. So we really can help each other out. It makes it all much more stable because we can reallocate shares as people's circumstances change. So somebody goes on maternity leave or something, we can reallocate shares. It allows low entry deposits. So everyone does put in a deposit that's equal to 10% of the shares that they've been allocated. We're able to offer to take on people who've got much more kind of erratic jobs or earning patterns than mainstream mortgage lenders would consider. We've got low transaction costs. We do our own conveyancing, so we're not actually buying and selling houses. We're just
swapping shares around. We reduce risk because we've unhitched our share value from speculative house price rises, and that's a choice we've made. So we link the value of our shares to wages, and as wages go up by 1%, so the value of our shares go up 1%. It doesn't matter if the houses round about us have gone up 20% and got more and more unaffordable. And through that, we really think that that can sort of contributes to an intergenerational justice, and that's really important for us, that it, our individual children might not be inheriting huge pots of money from us, but actually what we think they are inheriting is a much more just system. Okay, thanks.
Okay, so I'm Sarah, and I'm in a family with Robin, Rosa and Grace. And I've got 5 minutes to talk to you about the C in Lilac, which is community. And I'll be honest with you, when I joined Lilac, I've got nothing against community. It's kind of nice and warm and fuzzy and friendly, but it wasn't what primarily attracted me to Lilac. It was what attracted a lot of people, but not personally me. I was attracted by the low impact. I was passionate about wanting to live a life which didn't impact too terribly on the world that I was going to hand down to who were Rosa and Grace, who were then a lot younger when they grow up, and to, you know, all of the children coming up in the world. That's what I was passionate about. And I also reacted quite strongly against some of the claims that you hear from co-housing. And by that I mean, when we moved into Lilac, there's quite a lot of media interest in it and quite a lot of newspaper articles. And a lot of them were along the lines of, in our modern society, we live in this little bubble in this house, and then there's another bubble, another house, and we don't talk to our neighbours, we don't know their names, we don't have anything to do with our neighbours. And to be honest, I don't know what streets the people who wrote those articles were living on, but my street, not a co-housing street, a totally normal street 1 mile away from where Lilac is now in Armley, if anyone knows Leeds, is nothing like that. People know each other. People are intimately involved in each other's lives. Sometimes extremely negatively, I have to say. extremely negatively. But sometimes very positively. You know, we're still very much in touch with some of the people that we lived with. And love them extremely, love them a lot. So I reacted against that a little bit. And I thought, you know, who are these people making claims that co-housing is somehow the new way of community? There are lots of other communities. And, you know, you will have been to talks at Greenbelt talking about lots of different models of religious community. Church communities that I've belonged to are extremely strong communities. So I don't want to make any claims for co-housing that are overreaching and that kind of negate other forms of community. However, I have to say that as I've lived there now for over 2 years, the aspect of community, I've realised its massive importance and life-enriching potential. And also, you may have noticed that Robin's job was to talk about the low-impact element and Laura's job was to talk about the affordability element. Neither of them could do that without having a big chunk of talking about community. You will have noticed that. Both of them have already said a lot of the things that I would have said. So Robin was talking about how the community enables us to learn from each other, how it, the way that we're set up in a community enables us to live a low-impact lifestyle. And Laura was talking about how the affordability model that we've adopted means that we all rely on each other so much that we have to trust each other. If we didn't trust each other, it's our basic personal or family's financial future that is entirely bound up with each other. So we have to be vulnerable to each other, and because we have to be vulnerable, that forms extremely strong community bonds with each other. And community makes it all fun, it makes it all possible, and it makes it all worthwhile. So Robin has already talked a little bit about, no, in fact, I think it was Bill, about that co-housing has community designed into it. So in Lilac, similarly to one of the, I think it was maybe on the video, one of the projects there, we have the majority of common space. So each house has a small private garden behind it, and each flat has a quite a large, actually, balcony. I'm in a house and I've got balcony envy. I love the flat's balconies. So we've all got our own indoor lockable space and our own outdoor private space. But all the rest of our site is shared space, and it's quite big, actually. We've got some growing areas. We've got a little pocket park, which we share with the wider community. And then we've got a play area, and then what we call two village greens and a village pond and our common house. So we've got a lot of shared space, and that's designed in so that it makes us meet each other all the time. Our post, we don't get it delivered into our houses. We get it delivered to the post room in the common house so that we have to go and get our post from there, and all sorts of things like that. And in the questions, maybe if people are interested in that, we can talk about how community is designed in a little bit more. Community in our work as well. So Lilac is a community in the pretty much in the city centre. It's about 4 miles out of Leeds city centre in a very residential area. It's on an old school site. And everybody who lives in Lilac is part of the life of the city, so works in different ways within the city. So it's located there because that's where our lives were. And I think everybody who lives in Lilac was previously living in Leeds and working in Leeds. So people haven't changed their jobs to come and live in Lilac. We haven't changed our lives in that sense. We haven't changed our external lives. We've just come to live there and come to live in the community. So we are all very engaged in other communities as well. So maybe that kind of answers somebody who was talking about how we fit with nuclear families. It's kind of just the same, but more so and more supportive, I think. I just want to give one example. Sorry, is it time? Okay, I'll stop. If you want to find out about my example, you can ask me in the question.
Come on then, stars. Okay, I'll just introduce you to two of my lovely neighbours. Could somebody block that light out? Thank you. So Grace and Rosa Fishwick. And in our community, there are about 36 adults and about 12 children. And so we thought it would be really good to hear about what it's like to live in Lilac from the children. And this little seal, whose name is?
Celia.
Celia, the seal, named by the children. Is going to ask them some questions. Okay, so the first question Celia would like to ask you is, what are some of the really good things about living in Lilac? So Grace, if I pass you the microphone first.
Well, it's because everybody's there, and so if you hurt yourself, then there's already somebody there. Always somebody there. And to help you and take you back. Well, I'm pretty much the same as Grace, but I mostly like the littler children, because there's Grace, which is my real younger sister, and then I've got about 10 other younger brothers and sisters, starting from 6, going down to a few months old. So it's kind of nice having all of these little followers coming after me, going, can we play with you, Rosa? Rosa, we're playing boats. You want to play?
Pirates as well.
And also just watching them get older, remembering when some of them were just tiny.
Thank you. That's great. Celia's got another question. Oh, well, she just had a comment, so sometimes it feels like a big extended family to you, maybe. So as well as that big extended family in Lilac, do you bring other children into Lilac to play? And what do they think of it?
Yes, and they just think, wow, look at all this space. We can do anything we want. Yeah. Most of my school friends come over because, well, we went on a school trip to Lilac, so they all really liked it. So they all came round and they were just amazed by all of the space. And like Grace said, mostly like they liked the trampoline. And most of them by the end just wishing that they can be part of it and live there.
Thank you. Now, Bill called this session Utopia. Utopia is a place where everything's perfect. Is Lilac like that, or is there anything difficult about it? Do you think anything difficult about living in Lilac with a big extended family?
Well, he always trail behind you. If you want any, like, private time, they just come up. Like, especially somebody who's the oldest apart from me and Rosa, called Lewis,
I'll just interrupt here because a year ago they were getting married.
And he keeps on knocking on the door and he's quite annoying now. He's growing up a lot. living in Co's housing is really amazing, and it's kind of hard to find things that you don't like about it. But like Grace said, there's lots of things that you just want to be alone with, and you don't want to like have to be with all of these little children playing. Like if you invite your friends round, you don't want all of the little ones to like tag after you all the time. I normally just isolate myself in my room.
So we've got some private space. Okay.
So we'll just finish by saying if there's people here who are thinking of moving into co-housing and they might have children, what would you say to them? Do you think that their children would like to live in co-housing?
Yes, very much. And because in Lilac there's lots of younger children and one older child for me, but it's just really fun to play with them all the time and to just play hang around with them. I think you really wouldn't regret it, as all of the children would have a big space to play in, and if there wasn't a road in it, then they wouldn't have to worry about cars. They could just play outside a lot more than, well, probably what they do normally. And they'll make a lot of friends.
Thank you. And for the adults too, it's a delight to have so many lovely children around and come and knock on your door and say, "Can I have some time with you?" It's great.
Great. Right, I'm just going to say spend a few minutes talking about Chaco, but one general thing about co-housing, anyone who's thinking of doing it, it's not going to be perfect, and most, particularly in the setting up stage, you know, it's quite stressful. I often hear tales of, you know, meetings ending in tears. You don't go into it lightly, and you're not going to get 100% of what you want. The aim, and it's sort of a consensus decision-making process, is to try and get you, let's see if we can all get 90% of what each of us wants, and that's quite a high, sort of setting the bar quite high, I think. But you need to go in with that sort of attitude that it's not going to be perfect, but it's going to be well worth what we do achieve. A quick bit about Chapeltown co-housing. Chapeltown's a very different sort of area, and in particular, it's multicultural. It's in the top 4% supposedly most deprived parts of the UK, and so there's not a lot of money kicking around, and it's very diverse. So we've got a set of about six values, and the last two of them are affordability, like Lilac, and diversity. Because if we set up a sort of white middle class, and you can tell where I come from, a white middle class community in Chapel Town, it's going to stick out like a sore thumb, and probably, although it may have some sort of benefits to the people who live there, it may create sort of tensions and sort of hostility and resentment in the rest of the community. So it's vital for us, as much as possible, that we get as much diversity in. And it's we have an allocations policy that says it sounds a bit like UKIP, really. Sorry about that. But it basically we say that we give priority to people. Two-thirds of the units are reserved for people who have a strong connection with Chapel Town. In other words, have been living here already. And so you have to work quite hard to become an immigrant into sort of Chapel Town from other parts of Leeds in our model. And it's a way of we want to welcome as many as possible, but because of the particular needs of Chapel Town and wanting to make sure it's a genuine local community, it's this thing about there's plenty of community there already, like Sarah said, and that's why we didn't put our names down for Lilac. It's over the other side of Leeds. You know, Ali and I have been living there 45 years, brought up our kids there, and, you know, have strong relationships. There's no point in sort of throwing all that community away in order to create another community sort of somewhere else. So it has to be local, has to be in Chapel Town. The other thing is affordability. It's we've set ourselves quite a big challenge here. If there's somebody living on benefits, on housing benefit, in the streets around, and they see Chaco and they think, I'd quite like to live there. We don't want a price barrier to keep them out. So for us, we have to make sure at least some of the houses are somehow going to be available for people on housing benefit and sort of to work with the sort of social housing model. You have to be quite creative about that. I'm not going to talk much more about what we're doing because I want to give you time for... I can have a bit more time, apparently. Yeah, right. Fantastic. right, yeah. It went from 5 to 2, just while I watched. Thanks. The thing about Chapel Town is that, it's... The affordability is a very key thing, and where we've got to at the moment is that we're in the stage of having we got £10,000 from the social investment business through an organisation called Locality to do a pre-feasibility study on this site that we found, and we're currently in negotiations with Leeds City Council to acquire it, and then sort of suddenly they threw a bit of a spanner in the works saying, oh, we've miscalculated the birth rate. We need 30 new primary schools across Leeds in the next 3 years. And so they're probably going to be building a primary school on this site, which is ironic, seeing as there was originally a primary school on the site and they demolished it about 15, 20 years ago. And one of the people who's one of our prospective members was chair of the governors at the time. I've got 1 minute. What else can I say? We're busy building up our prospective membership, and we're doing quite well at sort of reaching out and bringing in sort of people from the different ethnic communities in the area. I'll leave it at that, and it's time we went on to questions, I think. Sarah, are you driving this one?
Great. Can I invite anyone who feels like they want to answer questions about co-housing to sort of come and stand along the front, including anyone else who feels they want to answer questions? Okay. Yes. Do you want to go first?
Yeah. How do you find the people that might want to become a co-housing community with you in your area? How do you tap into the beginning?
How do we begin? Does anyone want to have a go at answering how we begin? Nora?
I think we worked really hard to recruit people. So every month we had socials and we advertised those. Oh, well, initially there was a very small group of four people and then five people who just had a shared idea. So we had four visionary members who sat in their bedroom one night and thought, let's try and do something different. And then, so the rest would be, how do we build up the measurement, the membership from that? But it starts with a few inspirational, hardworking people.
Does that answer your question? Anybody else? Yes. Yeah, fine, yeah.
Okay, thanks for coming and presenting. It was really interesting. I guess I'm interested about the principles behind your communities and how you ensure that there is a shared vision between all the people who live there, because I'm thinking, right, there's, you know, a lot of, you talked about mutual trust and everyone's got to buy in, like, financially, and so everyone's relying on each other financially to a certain extent. How do you ensure that people who move into the place, you know, accept the same values as you, you know, to build that trust and that community? Or do you think that it's not something that's ever worried you?
Do you want to have a go at answering that from Lilac's point of view?
Well, I hope somebody might chip in from Lilac as well. But I think we do have a sort of a statement of core values. So there are things which we all believe in to some extent or other. So, for example, you know, we all sort of are against the oppression of animals. Some people are vegan, some people are vegetarian, some people are meat eaters. But there is that sort of core principle. And that principle is there, and people know that these are the sort of people you're going to throw your lot in with. There's always a balance between how much you include people who are like you and how, in order to make it a safe community, and one which hangs together, and how much you want to be welcoming to all. And, you know, as Bill was saying, the Chaco thing is emphasising diversity a little bit more. And so, but there still is the same tension, isn't there? Is what we call the wide door, narrow door tension. And I think where we sort of see it is, we want to make sure that we all feel safe with people who are joining us, but within that sort of framework, to be able to be as welcoming as possible. So it's a matter of feeling safe, I think.
Yeah, can I just put in a bit about it's how you start off? It often starts with a sort of small group of friends who know each other fairly well. It certainly applied to us. And it helps to work out the values right at the start and then be secure enough about them then to be able to publish them and start inviting people in so that people know what they're joining. It gets really tricky if you're making it up as you go along. I know some people manage to pull this off and have it something that looks a lot more democratic, but we definitely started from a group of friends and worked out what we wanted to do and then said, does anyone want to join us?
And just to add to what Robin said about Lilac, I am part of, we're divided into task teams, and one of the task teams is the membership task team, which I'm on. And we have an extremely long housing allocation policy, which we've developed over time. And it has to be very detailed because it's about people's lives. You know, it's about not necessarily just about allocating houses to people coming in, but it's also if people want to internally transfer, if there's a family who's growing, if there's a family where a member dies, or, you know, somebody leaves, somebody splits up, somebody gets a new partner, all of those things. We have to have agreed ways of doing things, and it's an ongoing process for us, and it's been difficult, but I would say that I slightly take issue with something that Bill said, actually, about consensus being getting 90% of what you want. My experience of consensus is you get 1,000% of what you wanted, but it's not what you necessarily thought you wanted in the first place. That is my honest experience of consensus, apart from the colour that we painted the railings. Apart from that, zero of what I wanted. It wasn't a proper... We didn't do it well. It's not. I'll tell you later. It's too painful to go into. Yeah.
I'm quite sort of anarchist by nature and very suspicious of vertical power relationships and hierarchy. You've painted a great picture there, but I'd love to hear more about how you resolve conflict and how you arrive at those 1,000% consensuses, which I do believe are a model of what humans are capable of. I'd like to hear more of the kind of practicality of that, because I should imagine that's a fairly major task.
Well, just to start off at the extreme end of it, I think I'm currently one of the two people appointed to step in when there is an irretrievable sort of interpersonal clash, and I've not yet been called in to act on this. You know, so the red bat phone has been there all the time and it's never rung. So, you know, I think, you know, one of the things about it is that if you are entrusted with responsibility, then and you are aware of the fact that you are responsible for the vulnerability of others, then you do sort of step up to the plate to an extent. If you sort of feel that you are the underdog and you're not being listened to, that's when you can actually sort of internalise and reenact oppressive methods of behaviour. But I'm not sure if anybody else has.
Anything to say about that? Shall I just give you one example of a conflictual situation we've had?
It's not the fence.
It was to do with pets and livestock. So some people thought that they might like to keep chickens, and then there are some people who think that keeping chickens would be completely wrong because it's an exploitative way of seeing other creatures. So you would have thought that was started from a completely polarised point of view. And we avoided that one for quite a long time, quite effectively. So I suppose, you know, the most difficult decisions are the ones that you avoid. But we eventually, and the person who was particularly, one person who's particularly would have felt that maybe she would have had to have moved out of Lilac if we'd ended up having chickens or having chickens kept in the wrong way. And we talked about it for quite a long time. And the kids, in fact, were catalysts because a lot of the kids were saying, well, yeah, we want to keep chickens. We'd love to keep chickens. And we had various... The way that we do things is we have discussion meetings first, at which anyone can bring any item to a discussion meeting. We also have general meetings. So every other month we have a discussion meeting, and then the next month we have a general meeting. General meetings are for decisions that have been pre-chewed through very well. But discussion meetings are for floating ideas. So we had the children coming and bringing this idea and floating it that they wanted to do it. And it was quite interesting because it emerged as part of this that one of the things that the children really wanted to do with chickens was chase them around and have fun with them. And we discussed whether that was entirely appropriate. And maybe some of the children thought, well, actually, you know, that maybe wouldn't be very nice to the chickens. And we talked it all through, and we still don't have chickens, but we've arrived at a place where we've allocated a certain part of an area of Lilac where we could have chickens, and parameters wherein people who were uncomfortable with keeping chickens or certainly keeping them in an unrespectful way where they would feel happy. So we've kind of come to an agreement, I think, but we still don't have the chickens, so we'll see how that goes.
I think the best decisions we've made have also been slow, and we've learned not to rush it. And so we can go for maybe 3 attempts at consensus. And in between those, people who are not finding agreement will work together to try and sort that out. And we just keep meeting and just keep taking time. And during the construction phase, that was difficult. And sometimes some of those decisions weren't the best ones.
Sorry, I wanted to say something else, but I forgot what it was. Yeah.
That's not a good question to finish on, I don't
Has
think.
Has anyone got a really
anyone
good
got,
question
got
to
nice
finish
question?
On?
Yeah.
No pressure.
Hi. I might have missed this. I just wondered, how is it funded initially? So where do you get the finance to buy the site and build the buildings?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I'd like to answer this one because... I'm glad, very glad you asked that, particularly if you're fairly wealthy and you sound like what we're doing sounds like a really good sort of project, and you don't want to put your money into sort of the wrong sort of activities. We're going to be raising loan stock soon for the development finance. It's about sort of £2.5 to £3 million worth of building work we're going to be doing, and how do we do it? I hear you cry. So one thing to do is to we could either do it through sort of crowdfunding, or people who think this is a good idea and something worth investing in, maybe we give you sort of a low return, sort of 2 to 3% on your loan, or if you say then 0% if you'd like to just help get it off the ground. But that's one way of sort of raising finance on the thing. And the other good way for us in particular, because we're set up as a co-op, I think you're a co-op as well, aren't you, amongst all the other things that you are. There are well-established housing co-ops around the country are often sitting on a lot of money, which legally they're not allowed to pass out to their members, and they can only invest it in other cooperatives. And so there's probably plenty of cooperatives out there who would be very keen to support what we're doing because we're another cooperative. So we're hoping that that's going to be one of the solutions. Thanks.
Oh, yeah. So one of our founder members, Paul Chatterton, has written a book about the development of Lilac. It's not really about what Lilac is like to live in. It's about the development process of it, which we've got some flyers with a discount code. It's quite academic.
But it's extremely useful for us having this book. So we keep referring to it, and it's fascinating. It's really helpful for anyone who's seriously thinking of going into this sort of thing. We've also got some leaflets about Chaco, if you're interested, and there's Tobias Jones's book about his recent book that's just come out. That's over there about the woodland community. There's also the Utopian Dreams book, and do come and chat to us afterwards. Thank you. There's also general co-housing leaflets. I will put them out on the front here. I'll put all the leaflets out on the front. Do help yourself. What? Oh yes, the UK Co-Housing Network produced these leaflets. Nice picture of Lilac on the front. One of our prospective members on the inside. If you want to find out more, Google Co-Housing UK. You'll soon find the UK Co-Housing Network, which is a great organisation. Really put on really good events.
If you are seriously interested in finding out more in terms of Lilac, we have 3 learning days every year, one on low impact, one on affordability, and one on community. You're very welcome. We've got a website. If you just search Lilac, it comes up.
So thanks a lot. Thanks.